Music was my escape, and it gave me a reason to smile every day. I do believe that there is no gender in talent. All the comments about women are visual related. The only slight danger is that then sometimes you all get grouped as one entity, as one group, and you just become part of this one female conducting group.
Hallo, willkommen bei Rock und Randale, dem Podcast, der bei schlauen Menschen nachfragt, wie es klappen kann mit Begegnungen auf Augenhöhe zwischen Frau und Mann. Diese Episode ist Musik in meinen Ohren und ich hoffe auch in Ihren, denn heute spreche ich mit einer jungen Frau, die gerade daran ist, sich ihren Platz in einer Domäne zu sichern, die noch vor wenigen Jahrzehnten sehr männlich geprägt war. Oder an was denken Sie, wenn Sie das Verb «dirigieren» hören? Ich wette fast, Sie sehen jemanden vor sich, der aussieht wie Leonard Bernstein oder Herbert von Karajan oder Riccardo Muti vielleicht. Stimmt's? Dabei gibt es inzwischen eine Menge, sehr große Menge guter Dirigentinnen und eine davon ist mein Gast heute. Hello, Holly Chu.
Hello.
It's nice to have you.
Thank you so much.
Wir möchten, dass die Menschen, die bei uns im Podcast eingeladen sind, sich so gut wie möglich ausdrücken können. Und ich kann kein Koreanisch. Wir haben uns jetzt auf Englisch geeinigt. So I will introduce you to our audience in English, if that's okay for you. And I hope I get that right, because it's really impressive, all the things you have done and all the things you are going to do. You lead, among others, the North German Chamber Orchestra Ensemble Reflektor, and you were previously an assistant conductor of the Tonhalle Orchestra here in Zurich under the direction of Paavo Järvi. That's someone we know very well here in Zurich. You conducted das Deutsche Symphonieorchester Berlin, and you are artist associé at the Orchestra de Chambre de Genève. You were recently selected to be a fellow of Gustavo Dudamel. In the next season, you will direct with the Los Angeles Philharmonic Orchestra and the Orchestre de Paris. You were born in South Korea, raised in Los Angeles, and you are currently 33 years old.
Yes.
Did I get that right?
Perfect.
Good. So it's so nice to have you. It's a real pleasure, Holly Chu, to have you with us. When I read your bio, I was quite surprised. I mean, you are a late bloomer. You began playing the clarinet at the age of 13, and you were studying it by yourself at the beginning. You got your first lesson by a teacher at the age of 19. That's an age when other successful musicians or directors are already deep in the cycle of recording and performing. So what draw you to music?
I have to say it was more of a personal escape. An emotional escape. My parents at the time were going through a very turbulent divorce, and our financial situation at home was very, very difficult. So much that even at one point we were kicked out of our apartment flat. We had 2 days to just leave the flat. And then I was sort of, you know, homeless for a couple months, and then we moved into a garage.
Wow.
With my dad, and then my sister would visit from college on the weekends, but it was a garage, you know, a space for one car, and you had two people living there. It was a very tough time, but somehow music was my escape, and it gave me a reason to smile every day. And I enjoyed so much learning about music, and conducting also came really step by step. It was never a dream of mine from childhood, because I don't come from a classical musical family. Mm-hmm. And actually, my goal during my bachelor's studies was to become a marching band high school director. I was so much into the marching band world, and that was
my... It's a cool world. I mean, it's very much rhythm and, yeah.
Yeah, there's so much precision and perfectionism involved in it, and the dedication that is needed to be in marching band has taught me a lot of good lessons.
But why clarinet? Is it because it's small? It's not that expensive, I think, like a violin maybe or a piano? What was the reason?
Right. There's not a huge reason for clarinet other than when I tried out different instruments. There was like a day at the church where I was attending at that time, like a instrumental zoo. You know, you can try out different instruments. And clarinet was like a natural sound. The person who was giving the instructions she recommended it because she said normally people aren't able to produce such a warm tone from the beginning.
Oh.
So she thought, oh, it must be the one, you know, the instrument for you.
Mm-hmm.
And it was nice. It was a plus that it's small and portable. I cannot imagine being a tubist or harpist or,
yeah,
or contrabass player. Mm-hmm. Wow. Mm-hmm. A lot of respect for those musicians.
Your father was a professional baseball player.
Yes.
And he wanted to send you to the army.
Yes.
Would that have been an alternative to your career?
I thought about it for a very short moment because we were desperate financially. And in the States, if you join the army, even on the reserve army, which is much less time commitment in the army, you can get your tuition paid for. All of your college education is paid for. And then there was a bonus, $20,000 bonus just for signing up. So it was very tempting, very, very tempting, because our savings was in the minus.
Mm-hmm.
But I was very glad I didn't go because my passion is really, truly in music. And although I love discipline and following rules, and I'm quite good at following rules, and I'm actually also good at giving commands. I mean, from the experience of marching band, I was the student.
That's good if you're a conductor, right?
Right. I was the student giving commands to the marching band. And the commands we use in marching band is actually from the military tradition.
Oh.
So somehow, in a way, I was already trained. You know, in my dad's point of view, I already had the basic training to be in the army.
To be a leader.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You said that your family had financial problems and that you were looking like for rescue maybe also in music. And I can share that from a personal view. I also have a similar history, so I can relate, you know, that you need something like a space where you can feel safe.
Yeah.
Do you return often to that inner safe space, mm-hmm, now that you're out in the world and you have to perform and you have to be someone?
Right. I mean, for me, that safe space was created through guitar, actually, not yet through classical music, mm-hmm, because I really got into classical music much later, 19, 20, 21. And I learned to also play guitar by YouTube videos, you know, tutorials and just watching people play. And guitar is actually such an easy instrument to pick up if you can just bear the pain on your fingertips for, mm-hmm, 2 months, then you're set for life.
Mm-hmm.
So once you build a callus, then you can, you know, count on being able to play the guitar for the rest of your life, which is why I always recommend it to people, because it's, you can play chords, meaning you can sing 12 million pop songs and love songs.
All from the Beatles.
Yes, yes. Yeah, so the sound of a guitar always gives me a sense of serenity and peace.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Also, it sounds nice, even if you're a beginner, because with the violin, mm-hmm, in the debut, it's really catastrophic for all the ears.
Right, exactly.
But the guitar somehow always sounds nice,
mm-hmm,
yeah. This conversation takes place before a concert at the Tonhalle in Zurich that you will conduct. It's called Talents Know No Gender. It's a concert organized by Orpheum, a foundation that supports young soloists, a partner of Task Force for Women, who is producing this podcast and advocates for equality of genders in all aspects of our life. Is that something that is dear to you, gender equality or equality?
Absolutely. It is on my forefront of my thoughts with work that I do. I do believe that there is no gender in talent. I can assure, if you put it on a CD conducted by a female conductor versus a male conductor, and if you didn't know, you really wouldn't know that it was conducted by a female conductor, nor a violinist or pianist.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, people have styles and their trademarks. Then you know, that's Hilary Hahn, or that's Janine Jansen, or that's, you know, Oestreich. But you wouldn't know the gender if you didn't know visually. So I think talent doesn't have gender. And the fact that there's such a big gap, even in 2024 with the job market and opportunities, I do find it concerning, but with hope. Because it has already improved a lot. But I always want to take people back to the statistics. Because with social media, of course, whenever there's a female conductor, the media team, the marketing team of every organization wants to produce a reel or a video to promote that they are supporting women, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
But that also has a negative effect, in my opinion, that it gives the feeling that we are reaching gender equality. But in fact, the statistics show us very clearly that it's far, far from 50-50.
It's like 10%, I think, of the big orchestras are conducted by a woman, right?
Yeah, so definitely in the
really
tens. Yeah,
50-50. Mm-hmm. And also you said, you know, the labels and all the industry is quite proud when they can present a female conductor. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I can see that with musicians that they have to give a certain image, maybe also something, you know, quite feminine. Do you feel that pressure that you have to be like a certain way as a woman who is conducting?
When I was starting, so I started to study conducting now 7 years ago. And when I was starting, I did also, it did cross my mind. Maybe I have to be careful how I dress, because I think there is double standards.
Yes.
So the way you dress does affect how people perceive you more if you're a female.
Mm-hmm.
People just somehow wouldn't notice as much if a male came in dressed very casual, but if a woman came in dressing, you know, less than the normal, what is considered normal standard, then somehow people notice and think, ah, how come, you know, she's dressed like this or that? Or if she's dressed too sexy, mm-hmm. you know.
Or not sexy enough.
Or not sexy enough. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many, just from growing up in LA, you know, you look at all the tabloids of Hollywood stars and all the comments about women are visual related.
Yeah.
And this is not anything new I'm speaking about. So it's something that most people know.
Mm.
But of course, just the way we grew up in the society, like modern world society, we are brainwashed in this sense of double standards and we don't recognize it immediately.
I mean, I've interviewed Marin Alsop a few years ago. And I mean, she's one of the big and first women who conducted big orchestras. And she told me that she chooses very carefully the clothes she wears conducting, first because she moves a lot and she wants to be comfortable, but also because she says women are looked at differently, like what mm-hmm. you just said, that it's a different gaze that you have if you see a woman on the podium conducting. So she chooses most of the times a blazer, mm-hmm. you know. What do you do? What did you choose? What is your uniform?
You know, my belief philosophy is that when a conductor performs, that the audience is moved by the music as the foremost and the biggest proportion of their inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not a huge fashionista, even without music, like outside of the music world from day-to-day life. I'm a very minimalistic person, so I am not used to dressing very elegant or very
extravagant.
That's the word. Yeah, elegant. I hope. Yes. So for me now, my philosophy is to just dress clean, classy, elegant.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about style, but not clothing style, conducting style. How did you find your style? You know, when I see conductors, they're all so different.
Yes.
You have the ones who are very, you know, loud and they
bombastic.
Move a lot. Yes. And there are others that just move a little bit. So how did you find your style and your way mm-hmm. of conducting?
I have seasons with how I conduct. I'm still developing very much and trying out different techniques. And I mean, Paavo, his advice to me was actually something that was different than what I was told with other mentors. And his advice was to, at the beginning, when you're trying to formulate your grounding, your fundamentals of conducting technique, follow someone who you really admire, aka himself. I admire his technique very much. He said to follow it at first, and then through time, you will develop your own technique out of it. And I think his mindset is also coming from like the playing, you know, like a violin playing. We have schools like Russian school and French school,
yes.
etc. Mm-hmm. And people learn that school first and then they can develop into their individual artists. On the other hand, other people have reminded me that, you know, everybody has different body lengths, you know, arm lengths,
exactly.
fingers mm-hmm. size and hand size.
The shoulder width. Or wide, yeah.
Right, mm-hmm. how tall you are. So mm-hmm. things can look very different on other bodies. So to copy is not a good idea. But mm-hmm. of course, now I'm just trying to learn the principles behind gestures rather than the gesture itself. So for example, if you want to rush an orchestra, you have to fall earlier. you know, you have to go down earlier. If you want to slow down an orchestra, you have to rise later. Things like that. Those kind of principles of physics, actually, laws of physics, I'm trying to take away and then to formulate it into my personality and my natural way of moving, because I think the personality is directly involved in the technique and how you look.
Mm-hmm. You said that you admire very much Yavo Parvi. Do you have other idols or people that inspire you?
Absolutely. There's so many. As someone who's coming into the music world a bit late, of course, I'm learning so much every day and looking at many different maestros and people like Fabio Luisi, you know, took me under his wings when I was assisting at Concertgebouw. We were on tour, Asia tour, and I was lucky enough to go with them for the tour and a few weeks before that in Amsterdam. And Simone Young, I've assisted at the Zurich Opera House. We were doing the Richard Strauss Salome. I still remember the score very well because she impressed me so much with her knowledge and experience. And she's been doing this opera for that specific opera for longer than I have been alive.
Wow.
So I was very inspired by Simone. Mm-hmm. And of course, I mean, people who I have not yet met, but Gustavo, for example, Dudamel, his career was so inspiring from how he started as well.
And He comes from a simple background and made his way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just through hard work and just passion, what he believes music should be about, I find him very inspiring as well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You said before that in the violin world, you have this Russian school and the other school. Do you have different schools in directing? So is there an American school maybe or a German school or does this exist?
I have not been enough everywhere to be able to confidently say, but from my own experience, how I was taught conducting in USA versus in Switzerland has been very different. For example, in the States, technique is very, very strongly enforced. Mm-hmm. So you need to be able to do a proper pattern, you know, according to the textbook and be able to show articulation changes and tempo changes. And then you can talk about music and interpretation. In Switzerland with Johannes Schläfli, who I admire with the greatest of respects, his way of teaching is going through your musical idea first. So he will often ask, but what do you want to say with this phrase or with this piece or this movement? And then he will help guide your hands to fit into your musical idea, which I think is such a great way to teach conducting, because often if you go from the technique side first, you have a slight problem that everybody looks the same when they graduate. So like, as you know, school from certain maestro's name, their students look quasi the same, like cookie cutter. Not to diminish what they do, because it has pros and cons in both directions. For me, it worked really well with Johannes's way of teaching.
That's funny what you say, because I was a radio journalist before and we also had these big idols. And when you were in the school of that idol, you sounded just at the beginning. You sounded just like this person. And then with the time, you have your own style, just what you said before. You know, talking about Marin Alsop that I mentioned before, she has this special program for women who conduct. Do you think that's necessary? Do you think that women need special programs, special support in the world of conducting?
I think when you think about the percentages being so different, these programs definitely do help to expose you to the industry. The only slight danger is that then sometimes you all get grouped as one entity, as one group, and you just become part of this one female conducting group. It's a tricky... There's no right solution to any of these issues, right? Mm-hmm. Along with other issues we have beyond gender. Actually, when I was working with the Davos Festival, I had to listen through over 360 applications every summer, and I was there for three summers. And I had the job, the difficult job, to pick 20 string players to be in the string academy with the intendant Marco Amherd. And it was so difficult to choose 20 people, because if we went just by talent level, then we ended up with everybody from Central Europe.
Okay, interesting.
People studying in Central Europe, not their nationalities, but studying, you know, the schools were all from Central Europe, German speaking, or yeah, France. But then we had applicants, for example, a 19-year-old violinist applied, and he was from Nigeria, and he wrote in his motivation letter, "I learned to play violin through the YouTube channels."
Wow.
Because he doesn't have access to teachers. And so it just seems so unfair that someone cannot be given the chance to learn in an academy situation, mm-hmm. context, because of something that they cannot control.
Mm-hmm.
So more than gender equality, for me personally, the privilege difference is such a bigger issue mm-hmm. for my personal passion that I want to help to evolve in the classical music industry. Because when we just circulate these top 5% of students into these Gustavo Jungend Orchestra, all of these, you know, the Bundesjugend Orchestra in Germany, the SISU in Switzerland, Verbier Festival, all of these big festivals, if they only circulate these top 5% because they're only caring about the top talents, in a way, that just makes it's a circle.
Very narrow.
Very small, narrow.
I mean, that resonates with me when you say, you know, at the end, maybe it's more important to have more black musicians or more Asian musicians, because, I mean, the classical music, it's a very white male domain. We agree. So maybe that's more the problem, that we should have like different people, different looking people that are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very tricky because depending on the instrument, it also changes, right? So you have many now Korean opera singers coming up, and, you know, all the Queen Elizabeth violinists that were in the top 12. I mean, there were many Asians too. So it's not just that it's just white dominant, but I think the privilege background, like people start at a different starting point. I think that's really something worth discussing more in the future, because the winners, you see their resumes and they have either already came from a musician family or they have connections to certain organizations or conductors or headhunters, or they are born and raised in Germany and grew up in the musical scene versus somebody from, you know, Nigeria.
Or someone like you
who
didn't have, you know, the classical background.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Female composers are even rarer than female conductors. You specifically seek out and perform pieces composed by women?
Yes.
Why?
I think it's worth supporting for sure, not just because I'm a woman. If I was a man, I would also still want to support to widen this repertoire selection. For musicians, sometimes they argue, yeah, but the pieces are not as good as some of the standard repertoire, which happens to be by men. But I want to remind people, back then, like in 1830s, you could not study conducting. For example, the composer we're studying now or performing on Friday, Louise Farenc, she's a Paris-born and Parisian artist. She was extremely talented, and by the age of 15, she enrolled at the Conservatoire in Paris, but she was not allowed to be in the composition department. It was just not allowed at that time for women.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have a composing student starting without the same tools, how can you expect the same level of product?
Yeah.
Of course, you know, talent is individual, but the external influence and education has a huge impact. And I think when you don't have that, we should not judge it equally to Beethoven, like Louise Farenc to Beethoven. You know, it's not, it's like apples and oranges. Of course, Beethoven is above all, you know, a huge monumental figure.
We don't want to diss Beethoven.
Right. Of course. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think you get my point.
Yes. So the idea is really dear to you to really also push forward the work of women that maybe have been forgotten in the past. You know, there are some old-fashioned opinions out there about women in classical music. You just mentioned one, and especially also for conductors. For instance, the Russian conductor Yuri Temirkanov said in an interview that women can't conduct because, quote, the essence of the conductor's profession is strength, the essence of a woman is weakness. Another conductor said women can't conduct because their breasts get in the way. Do you hear stuff like that today still?
Thankfully, no. Thankfully, no. And I think those comments are probably coming from conductors of the different generation. And I do have sympathy for their comments. It's not that I want to villainize these people because they just grew up in a different time. But of course, for me living in our current society, I think I'm very grateful that I wasn't born, you know, 50 years ago and that I'm born now, that I can be, that people are excited that I'm a conductor, that people are supportive and that they want me to succeed and that they are really genuinely happy to see the steps that I'm making in my career. So this feels really great. I only have more respect for women who have done it before me.
Yeah.
Because they've had it much, much harder. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Marin Alsop, she told me that, you know, she was conducting and Bernstein was watching her in a class, like with other students, male students. And then one time he sat very quietly at the end of the room and he didn't move when she was finished. So she thought maybe she did something wrong. And she went to see him and she said if everything was okay. And he was quiet and he said, you know, if I close my eyes, I really can't tell the difference. So, you know, even someone who was really interested in uplifting women had sometimes this bias. And then he was surprised by himself that that's mm-hmm. actually not the case, that if he closes his eyes, it's just the same. So right. that was quite moving, I think, that a man of his generation was able to, you know, to rethink what he was thinking, actually.
Yeah.
In our podcast, we always try not only to talk about what could be better, but also give solutions or tips. So can you give us maybe three ideas or three tips how women can be brought into artistic leadership positions? What is needed? Maybe three things.
Mm-hmm. One thing I would like to discuss is that in the education level, so getting into a master's program is somehow still harder for women. Because the teachers who are on the jury tend to be mostly male, and their idea of what makes a good leader is based on a male model. And that just that fact needs to be reminded, because that can already set so many biases that they're not aware of.
Mm-hmm.
Because for them, you know, they just have to be good. They just have to be talented. Then I will take them. I just haven't seen enough yet. You know, while that sounds fair, but if their basis of those comments are based on a male model of a leader, then it's very difficult to include women in that, because not all women are as naturally, naturally forward or naturally loud speaking. Some I've heard comments also that some people were disturbed by a female conductor because of the highness of the pitch of the voice.
I see.
Of somebody being a soprano. And naturally, you know, when you are taught to speak in front of the public, you are taught to speak lower.
Yeah.
Because that gives more authority.
Competence.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But that's all based on a male model. So mm-hmm. how can we judge, you know, the population, you know, equally? So that's, I think, one thing to reflect on for everybody, which is something that my teacher, Johannes Schlifli, made aware to our whole class.
Mm-hmm.
Second thing, these quotas of inviting, you know, 50% female conductors and 50% male conductors, I think work well in a educational setting. So if it was a master class or a seminar, to have that quota set, no matter how many people apply, I think that's really great to
okay.
give the chance
50-50
for educational quota. Settings.
Mm-hmm.
Or competition settings. But when it comes to job settings, then I think the quota has to be adjusted proportionately. So if you have 100 applicants that are male and only 20 applicants that are female, you cannot do, you know, 5 places for male, 5 places for women. There is where I disagree with some of the quota mentality.
Yeah,
yeah.
I see.
Because it's for a job. It's not education is where it starts.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's where I make my differentiation.
So quotas for when it's education, but no quotas when it's like the professional world and you have to get a job.
Yeah, it's hard to say no quotas at all, you know, because every orchestra needs something different. And I hope that they see more than gender. And actually, when I speak to musicians, they're really not caring about women or men. You know, they just want someone who makes great music with them as a human being, not as a maestro, but as a human being.
And the third tip?
Third tip. this openness in the mindset when we listen to female composers, female artists, female conductors, to try as much as possible to go into it with as much blank slate as possible, to close your eyes and just listen. Because in the end, music should be about what your ears tell you, not so much what your eyes tell you. Mm-hmm. What you see with your eyes is like an icing on the cake, but the main part, the cake itself, should be the oral experience. So hopefully people can shut off their brains, but just open up their ears, size of an elephant, and make that the first thing.
I mean, you have these auditions that are behind the curtain where you don't see actually the musician. It's for musicians. And so you can, you know, you don't have this bias if you see someone. Does this even exist for conductors also?
Not that I know of. Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe with AI technology, we can fake a face and swap it. I don't know.
You said at the beginning that, you know, with the marching band music, you learned something like leadership and to command a group of people. So for non-conductors, what can we learn from conductors in terms of leadership? I mean, what can we learn? What can I learn? I'm leading people, so what can I learn from you?
Listening more than speaking is one big lesson that I had to learn. People often feel they're not heard if you're not at the top. So I think giving enough space for the people working under you or with you, enough space that they can verbalize their thoughts, emotions, concerns, worries, those, I think, giving extra space for that is like what makes a good leader nowadays. Also, seeing the person behind their title is another lesson I learned, especially through marching band, because you spend so much time away from rehearsals, in between, you know, when you're on the bus to going to a competition every Saturday, you're on the bus with your colleagues and then you're not there to boss them around, you know, and you have so much downtime together, it really becomes a family. And then you treat each other with more respect because you connect on a human level first. It's easy to think hierarchically. Mm-hmm. And if you're at the top, of course, you have somehow mentally the easiest position to be in because you have the power. But then to think from the people who don't have the power and to see, them beyond just their titles and see them as a human being.
Yeah, but still, if you go on the podium before a concert, you have to put yourself in a mood, I think, just to have this authority also that a conductor has. Do you have something, a ritual or something that you do to go into this sort of, you know, conducting modus?
Yes. I always try to take a nap. That's something I took from Pavel, actually. Pavel always takes a nap before, and that's to conserve your energy and to calm your mind before you have to go into this intense emotional experience.
Yeah.
And having the weight on your shoulders, responsibility to make sure you carry the whole orchestra and the audience through an experience worth remembering. Mm-hmm. And so having that extra 20 to 45 minutes before to just calm down, have nothing on your mind, and then to have step by step, let the music come back, I think is a great way. I once had a 96-year-old mentor. He passed away sadly, but he told me, your cup needs to be empty before you go on stage.
Interesting. So,
right. Because if it's already full, half full or fully full, of worries, insecurities, fears, etc., too much ego, then you don't have the space for the music to fill in. You don't have the space of spontaneity to come fill the space. And for me, that's what I love the most, watching Tonal Orchestra with Pavel especially, because there's so much spontaneity happening in the moment. And it changes from concert to concert, no matter if they're doing the same repertoire three nights in a row. Every night will be different because someone like Pavel and Tonal Orchestra at that high level of music making, they're so aware of their surroundings and the change of air temperature and, you know, the audience temperature. They're so sensitive to that, which I love.
It's such fantastic. And I think AI will never be able to have that feeling. You
right.
know?
Yeah.
Never, never. Mm-hmm. Last question. If a young person comes to you and says she or he wants to be a conductor, what do you tell them?
I actually ask them why, because sometimes what draws people to conducting is the cream on the cake, you know, icing on the cake.
Yeah.
And so if I hear an answer that has to do with the fame or the popularity or the power, I then give them a list of all the things that an actual, you know, in the job of a conductor, what you have to deal with. So I try to decide quickly, are they serious about this or is it just a, like a stardom that they want to follow? Of course, I always try to encourage women students, female students to try. For example, I was working at Schleswig-Holstein Music Festival, and I always give some chances in the rehearsal process for students to conduct, even if it's for 2 minutes. I give them the chance to try it because once you stand on the podium and see the point of view that I have, they have a different way of listening and seeing the reaction time. And then you end up also gaining more respect for one another because you have been in their shoes. Even if it's for 2 minutes, it's very eye-opening. So I give the chance. But what usually happens is that 9 times out of 10, it's always male students who want to try conducting. So at some point, I always have to remind the orchestra, if there are any female students, please don't be afraid. I am here not to judge you or not to break you in front of your colleagues, but to give you a chance to experience something you've not done before. And then, you know, you need to give a lot of encouragement. I always enjoy sharing that moment with a female student. Because if we want to somehow achieve gender equality, it really starts from the education level and to inspire younger women conductors to try it. Mm-hmm. Because it's easier in society for women to have doubts somehow. We're more fearful somehow of ourselves. We're more self-critical and we are already like holding on to our own ankles, you know, before we even try the first step. Yeah.
That was a great last word. Thank you very much for this conversation, Holly Chu.
Thank you very much for having me here. It was a great pleasure to talk with you.
It was a great pleasure to talk to you. Das war Rock und Randale heute mit der Dirigentin und Musikerin Holly Chu. Falls Sie es nicht schon längstens getan haben, erzählen Sie doch Ihren Bekannten und Freundinnen von unserem Podcast. Schicken Sie ihn weiter. Wir sind auf allen gängigen Podcast-Plattformen zu finden. Mein Name ist Nicoletta Cimino. Wir hören uns. Thank you.